I'm Brett Winton, and welcome to the SpaceX and IPO Wave live stream from ARK Invest. We have the three members of our venture investment committee here with us today. It's myself, it's Kathy Wood, our fearless leader, Charlie Roberts. Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Hello.
We're great.
Yes. Where's your enthusiasm? Didn't you hear the intro music? That was great.
Yeah, Charlie.
Social media team. So we are setting up for a SpaceX IPO that's coming in, you know, this forthcoming week, likely, as well as Anthropic, another, you know, key holding in our venture strategies, confidentially filing for an IPO or filing a confidential filing for an IPO, and rumors that OpenAI and potentially Databricks, as well as Freenome and Securitize, all lining up to list publicly. Kathy, you've been through a number of cycles. What do you think about kind of this wave of potential IPOs, why it's happening now, and what it means for capital markets generally?
Yes, it's we've been noodling through this. And of course, the first thing that came to mind is, you know, could it be because of the midterm elections and everything that could change because of the midterm elections? Because so many are considering IPOing at the same time. I also think that what is happening, and of course our research is showing it, is this technology revolution is so massive and happening so quickly, and the digital and the physical world are coming together so profoundly, that you almost have to use, you know, as many sources of financing as possible. And I think it says something about the magnitude of the investment that these companies see continuing as they scale into some of the biggest companies the world has ever known.
Yeah, and with some of the fastest revenue growth that companies, actually probably the fastest that companies have ever delivered at their revenue size, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think just one last point on this. I also think this is feeding into our GDP growth scenario. I think growth is picking up generally, and that technology is leading the charge. So it supports our forecast of 7 to 8% real GDP growth in the next 5 years.
Yeah, and I'll say a point on that, because with disruptive technologies, you get paid multiple times. The first time you get paid is because you motivate capital to build the infrastructure for the technology. So rather than just sitting in government treasuries, the money gets pushed into actual, you know, physical built assets. And these IPOs are in part, SpaceX needs money to build, you know, multiple launch towers and to build data centers, and Anthropic the same, to pay for the compute that maybe it's going to be built by somebody else, but it prompts kind of like the actual shovels in the ground, which drive activity. And then if these are good things to build, then you have a higher return on capital deployed. And so that feeds through into the economy in a second layer. And we believe they are good things to build. Charlie, when we, you know, first like began to look at venture, the part of the reason we thought it was important to have a strategy that was available to everybody is because companies had been staying private for so long, and seemingly maybe they'll never go public. Talk about unicorns and decacorns, and does this mean that unicorns and decacorns are going to dry up and everything's going to go public? Or how do you think about the dynamic private versus public here?
Thank you, Brett, and it's a pleasure to be here talking about this stuff. I think as well as the private for longer move that's happening, what's probably more important is more value generation happening while private faster. And this is, as you say, with companies like Anthropic, I mean, this is just a staggering, you know, all three of these frontier labs have built value in a staggering way, but Anthropic particularly, because it's only 5 years old, it was founded literally in January 2021. And to get to, you know, estimates of put it well over 30 billion ARR already is just unbelievable. So while we're seeing anyway companies choosing to stay private for longer, so around 10 years is quite the norm now, whereas historically it was, you know, more in the 3 to 5 to 6 kind of range, it's more the value generation. And what we're seeing with these unicorns, so there've been several peaks of actual newly minted unicorns. So around, probably unsurprisingly, Historically, you know, in some periods, we saw many more unicorns. I think the peak period was in 2021, where we saw hundreds of unicorns minted. But the actual value of the unicorns has been steadily going up. So that in the last 5 years, as far as we can tell, over $5 trillion of private company valuation has been created essentially from nothing. So this is unprecedented. And yeah, with the venture strategies, we thought what really matters is to make sure that people, everyone, has access in a very democratized way to this value generation, which is historic and is occurring on the private side. And especially with AI, that's been the biggest catalyst of this, because suddenly you can spin up a company easier than ever before. Apollo numbers suggest, or research suggests, that the new company formations in the US, the new filings, has gone up 10 to 20% potentially as a result of since the ChatGPT moment. So it's never been a better time to start a company. It's never been a better time to scale a company. It's never been a better time to build value. And guess what? So much of that value is built before you could even think about going public, because it's happening so fast. And, you know, there's even an interesting question about the role for venture capital at all as we go forward, because companies can be built to so much value so quickly. You know, a lot of people have been talking about the single...
请关注公众号,思维纪要社,更多纪要请加V,CN2021-0130.
...person unicorn or the five-person decacorn or whatever. And, you know, I think we are starting to see that kind of thing come true.
Yeah, and I think that it's kind of like the idea that, hey, because technology amplifies a human, then you can operate without humans. I think the reality is you actually will use humans for higher leverage. And same with capital. I think capital, you know, not only capital, but also kind of capital curation, as in market shifting capital to those ideas most promising, will still occur. And then there will be a lot of leverage on that capital. And I think a lot of value will be created. One of the ways I think about kind of the wave as a whole, which is clearly centered on AI, and we see that as the central dynamo that's accelerating all of these technologies, is that the on a chatbot to smartphone user basis, we're low 20% penetrated. That's where we were in early 1996 for internet users to PC users. And so you could think of us as being in the early 1996 timeframe of this cycle. In early 1996, Google was still 2 years away from being founded. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yes, you're going to see companies come public here that, and it's pretty clear, SpaceX is going to be monumentally valuable. They're targeting the largest IPO of all time. And I think the conflagration of capability that AI provides is going to spark off to create all of these spot fires of other like giant pockets of value that are going to start out in the private market. And they could all begin to parade into the public market and be like, here we are, we're disrupting people and we're worth monumental sums of money. You know, I think that, so I think it would be a mistake to believe that, hey, there's these three big companies that are going to go public and then that's going to be it. This was a fun game. Go home, everybody. Instead, I think them going public is going to create this entire bonfire of kind of activity in the private markets that then, you know, proliferates into the public.
Maybe market. Rocket ship's a better word than bonfire, maybe, but yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think also, and in line with what you're saying, Brad, we are seeing an entrepreneurial explosion. I mean, I meet servers in restaurants who are, you know, in their spare time so excited about the project they're working on that they think is worth millions because it's going to solve one of the world's problems. I'm seeing a lot of people worried about unemployment. You know, we're all out of jobs. I'm seeing for those who are harnessing and excited about these technologies, especially AI, I'm seeing incredible excitement about, you know, the possibility to create something out of nothing, as you said.
Yeah, yeah, to go from zero to one. And part of going from, I think that this technology is so new. I said 1996 is maybe the proxy, but if you look at kind of more AI agents and AI agents penetration of enterprise, that penetration level is more like 1990, which is pre-web browser. This is, you know, the very, very, you know,
since I was there, Brett, at that time, people were scratching their heads. Internet. What is this thing, the internet? That is not happening this time around. People get what's going on and they're experimenting and they're excited.
Just to, to build on that quickly, Brett, one thing I think we've been seeing and talked about previous unicorn cycles, obviously the DNA of the firm is to look at and model NASDAQ companies, even early NASDAQ companies in that same sort of unicorn valuation, and to do so with really tangible traction metrics and to get comfortable with the revenue, the MAUs, whatever is the metric that's relevant to that company. I think the new thing we're seeing generally across the private companies are these are very real companies growing very fast with very real revenues, clear line of sight to profitability, real retention and enterprises going back in for more. And then at the upper end, you know, maybe the three big labs that are coming close to IPO, those are, you know, we've never seen revenue generation and return, you know, enterprises and others building into it. If you look at even things like the entire product suite of Microsoft Office, these companies are headed for that and way beyond, and will probably blow right through those revenues very fast.
Microsoft 35 years to get there. We're talking about five years. Right. So.
Right. 5 years and screaming past, like growing, or at least as we anticipate the market developing, still having plenty of headroom for growth as they eclipse literally the most important enterprise productivity suite in the world, including the operating system, Windows and Office. So speaking of screaming past and ascending rapidly, one of the companies, probably the most notable one here, SpaceX is, filed. We've all read its filing. It's preparing to list. Kathy, you've had a lot of experience investing alongside Elon in his various enterprises. And here we have another one about to go. How do you think about kind of this company that is, clearly has amazing ambitions and it may be received into a public market that is looking at a revenue base versus a valuation base that is very different from what they're used to? How do you think it'll be received and how do you think people should think about it?
Well, judging from the kind of demand for SpaceX that we've seen in the private markets, I think it well exceeds the, what is it, $75-85 billion offering. And so just like we've seen with other offerings, I think we will see a burst out of the gate, especially if anyone's tuning into our models and our thinking about the impact of Starlink and orbital data centers and the moon and then ultimately Mars and so forth. So we have that long-term time horizon. And then it's going to be very interesting. At some point, it will reach a level, and we don't know what that is, and it might happen very quickly, where you will have more traditional players in the markets using valuation as a reason to sort of bash the stock. We've already seen it. Morningstar apparently came out and said it's worth half as much as this. And of course, we've got, a very different story. And the reason we do is because we have five analysts working on this. This is the convergence, story of our lifetime. Even Elon 9 months ago started using this concept of, wait a minute, my companies are converging, more and more quickly than I thought they were, because obviously he had this orbital data center in mind. So I think you'll get that initial burst. And we'll certainly be out there educating about, and we'll see what happens. The fact that it's going to get in the indexes as quickly as seems to be the case, the index providers are discarding their previous guidelines for SpaceX. It depends how big of the indexes SpaceX will represent. That will bring in natural institutional support, especially from those institutions who don't get as much as they want at the outset. So I do think there's a lot of support that way, but at some point you know, we will have the bear stories out there, just like we have with Tesla and all of the other stocks we own practically.
Yeah. Yeah. Disruptive innovation is by its nature both volatile and easily misunderstood. That's why it's disruptive.
Yes.
And you can think of, you can imagine the way the market kind of like does companies. It's like, this is the company that we can see in the rearview mirror. This is the next year, which the company is telling us what it's going to do. And then after that next year, basically we just cause things to fall back down to like normal average, you know, mm-hmm. And that approach to SpaceX would, you know, I'm sure people will take that approach and it will dramatically reduce your expectations for value in SpaceX mm-hmm. versus kind of like understanding that the company has, as far as we can understand and model, the opportunity for a very, very high return on invested capital. The reason they're coming to the capital market, it's like they need to build rockets. If they build the Starship rocket, launch costs can fall from, you know, 1,000-ish per kilogram to less than 100 per kilogram. If they have $100 a kilogram rockets, then they can pack them full of satellites. One Starship full of satellites can generate them roughly $1 billion of revenue per year for 5 years. You know, and so kind of like they can repeat that action until kind of they saturate the low Earth orbit constellation.
And if they own the market. They own yes. that market, right? They have a 10-year right, lead right. on everyone.
And that's the reason why it's rational that people say, well, there's growth this year, but then after that, I'm just going to decay it, is because in most circumstances, if companies are printing very amazing gross profits and return on capital, it means a sea of competitors is going to come in and eat all that up. And so when that happens, then naturally your metrics decay because you are fighting off all the competitors. But SpaceX has, there's no other credible competitor for rocket launch services at the cost that they can do it. And the closest thing, they just exploded the rocket to 1 billion smithereens just last week. That, I don't think that was actually good for SpaceX, but I do think it's just a sign of how hard rocket engineering is. And so it's a unique company at a unique time in the market. And, you know, we'll see, but I think it'll be a really exciting show.
And I think another point, Brett, is moat is everything in a flattening world, right? And SpaceX, I don't think we've ever seen such a moat. And, you know, you just talked about an explosion, which is exciting to watch maybe, and something else and just happens within space. But what SpaceX has made boring, which is one of the most impressive feats, obviously the explosion was not SpaceX, it was a Blue Origin rocket, but is the Falcon 9 is now somewhat boring to watch, right? Because it's so consistent. It's so good. They've been launching on average something like one every 2 days, or at least two or three a
right.
week. For now 600 launches or so, and almost no incidents.
Right. If, well, in the beginning, it was fail,
right.
fail, and then take
right.
off. And that was really, for the last 8 years, it's been almost, well, I won't say perfect.
And I encourage people to read Liftoff, which is a book I came across my radar because Elon reposted it, I think, on X, or it was probably Twitter at the time, mostly accurate, which was glowing praise indeed. And it's a good read about the early days of SpaceX
yeah.
and quite how hard it was. If Starship can
yeah.
be made to be that consistent and frankly that boring, and I'm sure there'll be other great things to watch, including Mars and whatnot, and I'm sure Mars will now happen, especially because of the multi-hundred-billion-dollar equity incentives that's been added on as part, which is, I think, the first time interplanetary incentives have been added to an S1, which is interesting and fascinating to watch. But if Starship becomes that boring, as it were, that consistent, that is the next level of moat, and that will rapidly, as we know, bring down costs to orbit to a point at which orbital data centers get truly unlocked. And also would encourage
right.
people to read the ARC analysis and forward model of SpaceX, which seemed outlandish at the time. Now, it didn't include orbital data centers,
right.
but with Starship and Starship becoming consistent, that will become, I think it's under $300 per kilogram, begins to become
yeah.
viable, and under 100, it's actually way competitive with anything that will happen on Earth. And that looks like a when, not if, given the successes in Starship, given Elon's absolute passion and zeal and this incredible team he's assembled and continues to build
yeah.
around him to make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's a ton of engineering work to get there and to get Starship reusable. And I think one thing, just like a general statement about Elon's business strategy, is he is a master at, you know, investing in extending the exponential. And so, you know, in exponential growth, like, our human minds have a hard time really like, we think linearly. And so with exponential growth, something can look like it's moving very slowly, and then suddenly it looks like it's all happening at once. And he anticipates, across his businesses, the future choke points that would cause growth to decay, and then invest directly in the things to unlock, which makes investors nervous, because you say, why are you building a TerraFab? You have a great business here. Why bother, like, with all of the execution risk and capital that is required there? And it's because he's trying to actually extend the exponential beyond, you know, even the 3, 4, or 5 year forward view.
So, Brett, one other example of that, and this has to do with our own research. When we started modeling out Starlink 5 years ago or whenever it was, we sized the opportunity originally, I think, at $34 billion, right? Because we were interpreting the market, okay, this will be for rural areas or over the water or what have you. Now, SpaceX thinks that this TAM is $1.6 trillion, and it's because it's not just that. It is really all of telecommunications and all of the internet, and it absolutely is possible. But we weren't thinking that way, probably because we were constrained by what we thought was the possibility of hardware. Not, you know, we just weren't thinking in that way until Elon showed the way.
Well, and it really does depend upon, at that time, a phase array antenna, or the best in the world, a phase array antenna that could work cost like $27,000 or something. In that, I think it was $27,000. So kind of the investing in all of the friction points that allow you to get to scale. So they built their own phase array antennas. They, you know, that allows for cost to decline, which then opens up both markets you can model and unexpected markets. So even Charlie referenced the research last year, kind of we underestimated the high-end purchaser of SpaceX bandwidth, the airlines, how quickly they would come on board, you know, government, Starshield. And so actually, even in that work, leaving aside AI data centers, we were still under on their monetization rate per bandwidth in space. And, you know, we'll see how things proceed, but I think it's, like I said, certainly a rocket ship company, literally. Okay, so now we're moving on to basically lightning round. So there's two other frontier labs that one is confidentially filed, at least according to public reporting, for its IPO. Anthropic. Charlie, are you using co-working code? How do you think about Anthropic?
Yeah, you quite a lot of use of Claude, especially in, I mean, there was really a second, call it a ChatGPT moment around AI generated code, right? That occurred really December-ish with the launch, with the updated launch of the model at the time. And now what we're seeing is really a jockeying for position among the leading labs. So Codex and Claude kind of maybe overtaking each other, at least momentarily, on different parts of it. Clearly, Grok from xAI, or now SpaceX, is doing great things as well. A lot of people using Gemini. So I think what we're seeing there is essentially an arms race between massively well-funded leading labs, which is really can only be good, hopefully, for society broadly, but certainly for growth and real GDP growth, because we're seeing this massive, massive reinvestment of into R&D of companies that could otherwise probably, you know, potentially be profitable even, but certainly could, you know, so I think the code generation, and it is hitting a moment now where, you know, people talk about RSI now, recursive self-improvement, more even probably than AGI or ASI, artificial general intelligence, artificial superintelligence. But this whole concept of RSI, where code is writing code, is becoming very real very quickly. And, you know, speaking to people, you know, well, both the public statements from companies like Anthropic and also speaking to folks building, it's just incredible how much, you know, up into the high 90s% of code is being built by the systems that the people are building or have been building.
I think the key like threshold that was crossed is not just the code, the ability to do agentic coding also unlocked or really unveiled a set of in-depth applications, the premier of which is Claude and Codex from OpenAI, that allow knowledge work to be done agentically, because the ability to do code also allows the system to like basically pick up its own tools and begin hammering for you. And I don't know if that's a breakthrough that Anthropic or OpenAI anticipated, that good at code would also become good at general knowledge work in quite as profound a way as it's turned out that it has. But it's clearly a threshold that's been crossed where prior to the first quarter of this year, basically CEOs were pounding on everybody's heads like, you have to use AI, you have to use AI. And people were kind of trying to, but not necessarily figuring out how to. And now suddenly it's like people are like, oh, this tool actually really profoundly can help me do a lot of stuff. And so we're in, you can see it in Anthropic's, you know, reported revenue growth numbers. We're in takeoff mode on enterprise uptake of AI. And people look at these numbers, they say, oh my gosh, you know, 30 billion ARR crossing into, you know, there's reports of even higher numbers for them, and OpenAI the same at 30 billion ARR. And people think, wow, those are very big numbers. But you have to compare it to the $30 trillion in knowledge work wages that enterprises pay a year. And if you can equip enterprises with something that makes a knowledge worker, you know, twice as productive, they'll happily pay 10% the value of that to equip that knowledge worker with that tool. And so kind of in our aggregate modeling, we think AI enterprise software demand by 2030 will get to $7 trillion. And so this kind of takeoff is exactly the trajectory, the thing that we thought would happen is so, you would cross a threshold and suddenly it would be like, hey, we need this stuff.
And what's interesting about this one is you think about having been through the internet revolution, tech and telecom bubble. We did not know who was going to win. There, any company that slapped .com or internet in its description was getting funded. But think about how the market really has focused and how the companies themselves have focused on enterprise. Remember, ChatGPT, we were looking at weekly average users, right, in the beginning.
Right.
And that turned out not to be the relevant variable. Enterprise is taking off first. And I do think enterprise
Well, not yet.
Not yet, but it will. But that's an even more exciting, you know, there's another big part of the story to happen. But the reason it's happening at enterprise is it's coming from the top down and the bottom up. You've got executives saying, oh my gosh, if I don't start harnessing these tools, I'm going to be uncompetitive out there. And from the bottom up, I don't know if I should use that word that way, but it is employees saying, oh my goodness. At first they were saying, I better try this stuff because I might lose this job. Now they're saying it, oh, look, I'm using this. And we do our own show and tell in the mornings. And it's like, whoa, mind blowing ways to do work in some cases, a tenth of the time.
Yeah,
I think
that there's a – go on, Charlie, please.
I was going to say, I think we're going to see – we just saw today the news that Uber, I think Uber AI had capped – or Uber generally, I think maybe had capped employees' use of tokens for the first time. So I think we're going to see a wave of that kind of thing, right?
Yes, efficiency.
And efficiency and turning token usage into outputs, which mm-hmm. become outcomes. I think that's going to be the next thing probably for the coming few months, right? It kind of has to be. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do you really maximize the human in the loop to drive something that's valuable for the org, and everyone becomes a 10x or 100x outputter of useful stuff? I think that probably obviously, but it's going to become the next step.
Yeah.
Well, I also think, I do think on the enterprise side, it's likely that this market resolves to, you know, three or four companies really jockeying for position in the space, but they can all occupy pretty good margin structure businesses, kind of like infrastructure as a service. And so, to your, you know, I do think that the CEOs are like, yay. And then the CFOs are like, wait a minute. Because like token spend is becoming a real thing. And even like, it was probably a year ago, we were talking about how $20 a month versus $200 a month, like,
versus
are people
2000?
Really going to pay $200 yeah. a month? And actually, you know, Jensen is saying, well, a good engineer should spend his own salary in tokens, you know, which is more like $200,000 a year or $20,000 a month or more.
But that,
and
that,
I think in,
that created this bad hygiene problem. If that was the, if,
yes.
if that's what a good engineer, I mean, they were throwing, projects.
Yes.
And wasting a lot of money. So we're seeing some backing and filling on
yes.
that.
Yes. Yeah. And so I do think that the people looking at token spend and saying, hey, we need efficiencies here will cause some, jockeying in kind of market share amongst the labs.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I think it's right to think of probably like market share is going to resolve to access to underlying compute infrastructure, which is why SpaceX AI is interesting, because they're going to have orbital compute and should have an orthogonal way to get infrastructure, and why actually OpenAI, I think, is really competitively positioned here, even relative to Anthropic, because they bought and reserved a lot of future compute capacity, you know, before it became as dear as it is now. And so they have, you know, a better angle for both research and servicing the customers they have. And we'll see. It'll be a wild, you know, 6 and 12 months of kind of not just kind of market share kind of analysis and revenue announcements, but also continued advances in the models. I think people are underestimating the degree to which this is amazing today. Next year, it's almost certainly going to be a whole lot better in terms of what these things can do.
You know, what's interesting. I think many people began to understand, first it was 20, then 200. And even within our own organization, Brett being the power user that he is.
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 V,CN20210130.
I think you are approaching $2,000 a month, if I'm not mistaken, to the point where our CTO, taps him on the shoulder and says, what projects are you working on? Because he was looking at your consumption of tokens yeah, and yeah. saying, so, but not to stop you, but just to alert you that, okay, you know this is happening. So we don't want to yeah. stop you, Brett.
And do you know what I said to him? I said, the SpaceX model that
That's
we're
right.
building for this IPO is the best.
Exactly.
The best we've ever built.
And we didn't want to stop you. We didn't want to stop you. But it just tells you there's a little bit of the give and take, even in our own organization. Like,
sure.
Okay, because we want to understand how other organizations, well, we want to be efficient, but we also want to understand how other organizations are going to be grappling with issues as well.
Yes. And I'm a dedicated Codex user, by the way, not
yeah.
Claude, but I switch back and forth. And I think that, again, you know, if you look at kind of the per task done basis, Codex is actually maybe twice as efficient a model, maybe even more. And so it's possible that Anthropic, which has all this momentum, will be fall under more scrutiny with kind of CFOs and
yes.
CTOs being like, you can get the same work done for half the cost if you just move over here to a very similar tool. So those kinds of dynamics will, you know, play out over time in the market. And it probably will result in, at some point within the next month, there's going to be a media story about, oh, the AI boom is over. Nobody's wanting to spend money on tokens anymore. This whole thing is like a false dawn. This
well, that's
work.
Already
and,
starting. There are announcements. You mentioned Uber and other
yeah.
organizations are taking a look at their expenses. And, you know, especially
right.
venture capital firms, they're looking at their startups' use and efficiencies, and we're hearing about some surprises, oops, some mistakes. I didn't realize it was costing this much when venture capital teams scrutinize their expenses, right? So it's even
yeah.
at that level.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me, even in the transition to the cloud, people were arguing, oh, this is actually much more expensive to do,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually creating an agile AI-first organization, I think, is going to be clearly the dominant strategy on a forward basis. And my gosh, we are already 5 minutes over on time.
Oh, dear.
So I'm going to give you, I'm going to, one lightning round. It's not just the core AI labs that are likely to kind of try to list over the next year. There's also platform as a service companies like Databricks, which we find really fascinating and interesting. And even I mentioned AI is the central dynamo, but you know, Freenome, which is molecular diagnostics for from blood tests
using AI,
using AI, and Securitize, which is taking real world traditional financial assets and actually truly digitizing them so that they can be interchangeably like moved and much more kind of efficient for the economy, are other examples of companies across technologies, across the technology areas that are going to probably try to and have plans to, you know, list during this window. So I think that this business cycle, yes, it's AI first, these big AI labs that are listing, I think you're going to have a sea of startups behind them. And there's also in embodied robotics, in multiomics, in the public blockchain space, waves that we think will follow. And that's what really makes this a, it's not the convergence of technologies also causes the technological waves to kind of overlap and stack because an acceleration in AI can accelerate things that are downstream of it. And so I do think this will be, you know, a historic cycle. A cycle without precedent. So
a revolution.
Thank you much for joining us. Yes, Kathy, Charlie, thanks for joining.
You, Brett.
And yes, everybody grab a surfboard and surf the coming wave.